Now, your reading on the French Revolution is extremely full. You read both the Lefebvre, which is the best book on the origins of the revolution. You read also the revolution in the text. And so I am going to remark today only on some very specific things and problems in the revolution today, and then after vacation in Napoleon. As I have said, the basic phase of the revolution, Lefebvre describes very well. What we call the bourgeois liberal phase, that of constitutional monarchy. For the constitution of 1791 would have made France a constitutional monarchy, not very unlike contemporary England. You don't really have to read it now. You have about 3 weeks' time to read it. As you know, we shall select from your final certain questions on which we will then test you in class on the final, which I think is the 23rd or 24th. I forget now what it is. So you have 3 weeks to read it. If you lose it, you can get another one. Now, however, the constitutional monarchy obviously did not work out. Why? And here we come to the first new, really, factor in the French Revolution, the part played by the mob. The storming of the Bastille, organized by outside forces. And indeed, if you read about the very meaningful role that the crowd played in the French Revolution, we must say that all mobs, with one exception, were organized by outside forces. The one exception was the spontaneous uprising in 1795 in favor of a commune, that is, of a more socialist-oriented government of Paris, a rising in 1795 that was, however, savagely suppressed. Unlike the English Revolution, here the crowd had no organizational framework of its own, the kind of organizational framework which the army of Cromwell, remember, gave to the crowd, does not exist in the French Revolution. As a result, you have a kind of double movement. First of all, organizers who stirred them up, the Jacobins above all, with great effect, the storming of the Bastille, which saved the assembly, which got royal recognition of the assembly. But the problem was to control the crowd once it had been roused. It was easy to rouse with symbols like the Bastille, which had to be stormed. It was something quite different to control it. You will see that throughout the French Revolution, the crowd constantly got out of hand, that in the end it had to be suppressed. The Jacobins are a good example. They roused the crowd. In many ways, they came to power by popular demand, by the crowd they had roused. But it proved impossible almost for them to control the crowd, so that you always end with suppression of the crowd. Even in the Jacobin phase, you end with this kind of thing. This happened whenever the organizers became the center of power, like the Jacobins. But not only do we have this rhythm of the rousing of crowds and the problem of crowd control, but we have also spontaneous uprisings, but not in Paris, not where you have the urban crowd. Typically enough, the spontaneous uprisings were in the countryside, where they tended to be peasant uprisings without any great goal, without any great organizational effort, or at times spontaneous food riots, but most of these food riots were also in the countryside, and those were stopped by the Jacobins' measure fixing food prices, by the Jacobins' law of price control. It is a fact, then, that in the French Revolution, the crowd played a new kind of role. It was not the only effective force which brought the Jacobins to power. There was the unreliability of the king, who did not want to cooperate with the Constitution of 1791, the unreliability symbolized by his attempted flight. There was something you must never forget, the pressure of foreign war on French soil. And there was, of course, not only the unreliability of king, the pressure of foreign war, but also the organization of the Jacobins, the organization of the Jacobin clubs, who had a national organization and an attractive program of fundamental change, or what seemed to be fundamental change. Now, if the crowd was only one feature of getting the Jacobins to power, it was still, as I said, a new, meaningful feature. For the first time, really, in a national basis, the problem of crowd control and the role of the crowd in the revolution becomes extremely important and extremely interesting. But once you have what is called the Jacobin dictatorship, once you have the Jacobins in power, that fact itself was also new and also made a great contribution to the future. For it isn't only that the Jacobins came in with programs of fundamental change. Their most fundamental change was to do away with the monarchy. Their other fundamental changes were no greater than the levelers. Indeed, their program is the same program that the levelers had in the English Revolution. But the interesting thing is that when they came to power, they faced a problem, which is, if you like, already a modern revolutionary problem, the kind of problem Cromwell hadn't really faced, because his radicals were organized in the representative soldiers' councils. And once Cromwell had dwelt with the soldiers' councils, he had it under control. But there were no soldiers' councils in the French Revolution. The mob was roused, as it were. Promises were made. The existing institutions were abolished. And what now? This is the problem Robespierre actually faced. There were several roads he could have gone. He could have, if you like, simply set up a kind of democratic system. Difficult to see how, but I suppose it could have been done. He could have stepped up his propaganda machine and could have embraced Rousseau's idea of the general will. He could have said, all right, the monarchy is over, the new government, the government of the revolution is there. What Rousseau prophesied has come about. The government is by the general will, and therefore we can have a kind of mass or direct democracy, because like Rousseau, we can believe that it will now, that people are free from corruption, lead to the right kind of a result. This kind of program proved to be, of course, impossible. For there were not only the crowds, fickle and unstable, subject to propaganda, but there were also the enemies of the revolution. And the enemies of the revolution were all around. The royalists were still there. Most of France was royalist. Most of the French countryside was given to royalist uprisings. And so it was very difficult for Robespierre to say, let us not use force, the people will be all right, because there are always the enemies of the revolution. And what are you going to do with them? Robespierre, of course, solved it in his own way. That is to say, by putting up a theory which combined the realism of the situation as he saw it with Rousseau's general will. The theory you already know, and is a very simple one and familiar, namely the fact that the will of the people must be enforced against the enemies of the people. That what you must have, therefore, in effect, is a dictatorship, so as to preserve the revolution against its enemies. To have what he calls in your source book reading, the despotism of liberty against tyranny. And that despotism was necessary because of the enemies of the revolution. What happened in practice, of course, is that this despotism went much beyond the enemies of the revolution. That this idea of the despotism of liberty against tyranny meant, in the end, a despotic rule, because how were you to distinguish an enemy from a friend of the Republic? How were you to distinguish it to save the revolution? And inasmuch as the Committee of Public Safety saw enemies all around, the despotism, of course, became a general despotism. And why did they see enemies all around? Because, again, I must remind you, there were foreign troops on French soil. There was a fifth column, as we would say. Situation was grave, and therefore you had to prevent collaboration with the enemy. The despotism was preventive, in a sense. And because it was preventive, you had to inquire into people's state of mind, into people's spiritual state of mind, because you wanted to prevent collaboration. And therefore, the despotism became total, and the police became informers, inquiring not only into overt action, but into action people might take, because the revolution was in danger, and you wanted to be, in this regard, a preventive. It meant, of course, two things in practice. First of all, a pressure towards conformity. Conformity in the name of general will, but enforced by the police, enforced by the despotism of tyranny. You must be forced to do the will of the people. And the will of the people is the will of the revolution. And the will of the revolution is the will of the Committee of Public Safety. It is a despotism on the basis of direct democracy. For the theory was that this was done at the wish of the people, the wish of the crowd. But the crowd, of course, was propagandized, manipulated. But on the whole, it was done on the wish of the crowd. So it was a direct democracy, and this conformity enforced in the name of direct democracy. Secondly, there was no room for privileges, of course, apart from the mass. This meant several things. The leveling of property, not its abolition. The socialists were executed. The leveling of poverty, no extremes. No extremes. But it meant, of course, as it were, outward signs, you might say, of inward grace. It meant the enforcement of uniformity of dress, the enforcement by threat. The uniformity of dress, it meant the uniformity of morals, strict morals in this regard, and it meant, of course, the outward showing that you were at one with the people, playing cards with liberties, equalities, and virtues, of course, because kings, queens, and knaves were obviously a sign of the fifth column. Republican names like Gracchus and Brutus, and of course never the name Louis, because that was also a sign of a fifth column, with needless to say. It meant wearing the working man's dress from Paris, what the working man wore. This is the origin of the modern trouser. This is the working man wore, a dress that made for a kind of equality. So that there was equality and it was total, it blanketed most of life. It was accompanied, of course, by these festivals, which I have talked to you about before, not as Rousseau meant them, but again instituted by the Committee of Public Safety, largely to displace Christian symbols with the symbols of the revolution. Christian symbols directly taken over for the goddess of reason or the tree of liberty. The idea of making martyrs and heroes, giving a calendar of saints, there was a calendar of revolutionary saints which had to replace the calendar of Christian saints, men who were killed in the revolution. Marat, remember, who was killed by Charlotte Corday in his bath, was the greatest of the revolutionary heroes. And around him there was a regular cult, as you had a cult around the Christian sects. His funeral in Notre Dame, secularized Notre Dame. Where the Virgin Mary had been, there was the goddess of reason, and all of this was, in a way, secularized. This is what often has been called, rightly, the terror. For in the last resort, this was enforced by the guillotine. Some 40,000 people perished in this tyranny of liberty against despotism. In the end, of course, the members of the Committee of Public Safety themselves. For how long did this work? When was that a success? It was a success when it was necessary, in a sense. The Jacobins did save the revolution. They stabilized the economy by rigid economies and price fixing. They won the war by rigid military discipline and rigid conscriptions. That they did too. But once they had been successful, they undercut their own rule. The very success knocked out the practical props from under the regime. It made it unnecessary. The first sign was when the guillotine had to be moved to a back alley. At first, the guillotine was a great success as a public and edifying spectacle. You all know that it took the place, in a sense, of religious spectacles and of the Christian sacrifice. You know that thousands and tens of thousands watched the guillotine do its work day and night. And whenever a head was held up, this was another blow for the revolution. There is, of course, a lot of cruelty here. But remember, public executions had always been an amusement in the 16th and 17th century as well. As I told you before, towns bought condemned criminals from other towns to put on this display. And in a sense, the display of the guillotine was something very traditional, what people had always enjoyed, the spectacle of execution. But like any spectacle or like any good musical, which you enjoy, because it was very much like it in a sense, you soon get bored with too much of the same thing. And this is something anybody faced who had to do with crowds. This is one of the great difficulties. It was the difficulty for Robespierre and the Jacobin dictatorship. The people got bored with festivals. The people got bored with the guillotine. It will be, by the way, it goes on, it will be one of the gravest problem for National Socialism on its rise to power was that people got bored with the mass meetings. And you always had to see what you could substitute. They loved them for a while, but when they became weekly affairs, they got bored. And this is the difficulty. This is the difficulty in manipulating mass movements. The crowd gets bored, and what then? Well, the Jacobin dictatorship was about to fall when that happened. The guillotine was put in a side street, and instead of the enthusiasm, which is very difficult to maintain for a long time if you work this direct democracy with crowds. Everybody has had difficulty doing that, from Hitler and Mussolini to Robespierre. Once you do this, how do you maintain the enthusiasm, you know? Soon life becomes dreary again. What do you do? And the question here was, of course, that as the enthusiasm couldn't maintain, people suddenly began to feel insecure. With some justice, there were police spies everywhere. They began to feel insecure. The enthusiasm vanished. And above all, the members of the assembly began to feel insecure. For a while, they had been carried away by all of this. And moreover, as I said, internal order had been established, external enemies had been defeated. And so the end is a terrible anticlimax. Robespierre is simply arrested in the assembly and himself marched off to the guillotine. And this was that. Reaction set in. And it was proved that the new symbols had, as a matter of fact, not replaced the old. The Catholic Church made a comeback. You couldn't, it was proved pretty much, just substitute new symbols for old symbols. It just wouldn't work. People, as I have told you before, are most conservative in liturgy and in the symbols to which they have allegiance. It's the most difficult thing, it proved, for everyone to ever change the traditional symbols to which people have allegiance. The Tree of Liberty was not the cross. And the Goddess of Reason was, after all, not the Virgin Mary. It couldn't be done, this rapid substitution. So with the Jacobin dictatorship collapsed this kind of thing, which it had tried to accomplish. But it did not collapse completely, for everything like that leaves its mark on history. And the Jacobin dictatorship left a very deep mark on history. What is that mark on history? It is, first of all, the mark of direct democracy. It is the first regime which was a democratic regime with a small d. It raised the whole problem of the crowd. It raised the whole problem of force and revolution. And it proved to be the great example of force and revolution. The idea of the despotism of liberty against tyranny becomes a very common idea now. A very common idea. In fact, in a sense, the common idea for much of revolutionary theory. It will be disputed, to be sure, as you will see next term. But it has been the only revolutionary idea which has had success in practice. Those who disputed it were soon either drowned in the Spree or murdered on the streets of Munich. But this has been the only successful way. So this becomes extremely important. There is a phrase attached to it, totalitarian democracy. But I would rather you didn't use the phrase totalitarian, because it is much too imprecise. It's much better to say what it was, the despotism of liberty against tyranny, the rule of the people, the direct rule of the people. That is what it was. So that left a deep impression. Second of all, it focused the loyalty of the individual upon the people as a whole. Kings were out, dynasties were out. It focused it on the people as a whole. of which everyone was an integral part. This worship of the people was carried by the Napoleonic armies into every part of Europe. And you begin, therefore, a new age of European nationalism, where national allegiance will be to an abstraction of the people and no longer to the dynasty, to the king. This meant the quest for symbols, for you have to symbolize the people. So that it is not beside the point that it is in this stage of the French Revolution that we get the first national anthem, which came to symbolize the revolution, the Marseillaise, and became in the end the French national anthem. The first flag, the tricolor, which became in the end the French flag. And all this was cemented by universal military service. Universal military service, not only a necessity, but a symbol of belonging. A symbol of belonging to the people, of being one with the people. The idea of a citizen army and of universal service. Here the Jacobin dictatorship is an all-important starting point then for the liquidation of the dynastic age. The new symbols, the symbol of the flag. Typically in the wake of the French Revolution, Germany gets its national anthem, other nations get their national anthem, their flags, because you have to have a symbol. The goddess of reason was not enough. Around the goddess of reason you could dance, as around the golden calf, but you needed a kind of symbol that you could carry in front of your armies, that you could have everywhere, as the king and the monarchy was the symbol before. So the flag, the national anthem, and universal military service enforced rigidly for the first time in the Jacobin dictatorship. Enforced really, and partly on theoretical grounds. No Soviet of workers and soldiers, as in England, but forced on theoretically ground as part of the despotism liberty. Fourthly, the republican tradition. France now had had a republic, and that memory will never fade. Republic becomes associated in France and in much of Europe, therefore, with social reform, because the Jacobins did make reforms, like price fixing, like scaling down incomes, even if they didn't abolish private property and killed those who wanted to abolish it. Nevertheless, the Jacobins were levelers, so that the republics now become associated with social reforms, and monarchy, in many ways, with social reaction. This had not, I think, been totally true before this day. The Jacobin dictatorship then vanished. Its proponents died in the guillotine. And here we must say one thing which is often forgotten. You must keep this in perspective. Robespierre didn't kill because he wanted to kill. The guillotine was a humane instrument. And it was much more humane than the axe. Because in the axe, as you know, you had to give several whacks, which can't have been very nice for the victims. For example, Mary, Queen of Scots, I think, took 5 or 6 whacks before the head was off. But the guillotine does it neatly and all at once. So the guillotine was adopted because it was a humane instrument rather than anything else. And we must keep that in mind, because Robespierre and the Jacobin dictatorship did not kill out of killing. They killed for this theory, to preserve the revolution. They killed the enemies of the revolution. And you must keep in mind the numbers, because the counter-revolutionary propaganda, especially by Charles Dickens, has colored so much of thinking. 40,000 were killed. It's not that's not a great deal, because one battle of Napoleon alone, the Battle of Eylau, One useless battle of Napoleon alone killed 45,000. Napoleon in his wars killed many, many, many more people than the Jacobin dictatorship. You must keep that in line. This is a counter-revolutionary propaganda which says now and then that it was so bloody. It wasn't that bloody. And most of those killed were conspirators, were in league with the king and the queen. And the sympathy for kings and queens dates from the Romantic era, but certainly Marie Antoinette, who played a fateful role in the revolution, had it coming. And one's sympathy must really be very limited for this woman who had no understanding of anything, but who assisted in putting her two cents in at every corner. Like Henrietta Maria, like the wife of Charles I of England, similarly, limited women, weak husbands, women dominate, and catastrophe comes. Well, it's not quite that simple. But as a matter of fact, don't be too sympathetic for Marie Antoinette, because much of the, in fact, the rolling kind of momentum of the revolution is due to her bad and thoroughly reactionary advice at every turn. So we must keep the Jacobin dictatorship in perspective. Also, you must not forget the fact that what are you going to do with a revolution? I mean, you have a revolution on your hands. What are you going to do? And before you condemn it, think about that a little, because it will be very important. That part of the French Revolution will become the image of the revolution throughout the 19th century. When Marx wrote about a revolution, that is the revolution he had in mind. When Proudhon wrote a revolution and anarchism, that is the revolution he had in mind. Not until you get Lenin do you get the liquidation of this part of the French Revolution as the archetypal kind of revolution in Europe. Not until Lenin asks the great question and says, can you really have such a revolution with a machine gun? And Lenin answers it, no, of course you can't. Because if you had a machine gun, 10 soldiers could have shot down the crowd that stormed the Bastille. If you had the machine gun, you could have shot down these crowds without much thing, much hesitation. And so revolutionary theory has to change. But not until Lenin do you get that change. And until Lenin, this is it. Glorified. Glorified, to be sure. Making it an uprising of the people. Going back to a Rousseauian, in a way, inspiration. Not the historical reality of crowd manipulation and the crowd escaping from your manipulation and then crowd suppression. Not that revolutionary reality, for that will be the revolutionary reality in almost all European revolutions up to modern times. To this you must add, to this heritage of the Jacobins, you must add the continuing tradition from what we call the first part of the revolution, from the bourgeois part of the revolution. A tradition equally important, because the bourgeois, of course, won it in the end. And please don't be naive about that. Don't get into that terrible rhythm, you know. The people make the movement, and the bad, bad bourgeois take it away from them. That is history for little Moritz, because it is nonsense. There are reasons for it, and I've given you some of the reasons why the Jacobin dictatorship collapsed. The bourgeois did win this revolution, as indeed it will win all revolutions. And therefore, well, you can hiss, my dear, but once you make your revolution, I shall escape, because you will have the same problem of the tyranny of liberty against, of the despotism of liberty against tyranny. Every revolution has it. There have only been two revolutions which tried to do it from the bottom up, the Bavarian Revolution of 1918 and the Berlin Spartacist Revolution. And you know what happened to them. Now, before I end, And you can ask questions, which I have no doubt you have about this. Let us see the heritage of the first part of the revolution. Firstly, the abolition of special privileges. In other words, the abolition of feudalism. That will not return. That will last from the first part of the revolution. And secondly, the secularization of the state. That will not last. That will be disputed. But from now on, the idea that the state should have nothing to do with the church, that the state is secular, that will from now on be a major issue and will, of course, eventually win through. But not yet, not for 100 years, that the secular state is something of its own. And here you must put in the flag, the national anthem. And you can say, therefore, that the last and one of the most portentous heritages of the French Revolution is another step in the growth of the nation state. You've seen the nation state grow. You've seen the decisive step in the religious wars of the 16th century. Here is another decisive step. The nation state not only begins to dominate your lives, but it begins to have a religion of its own. Its own symbols, its own irrational ideals to which you have to have allegiance. This is the final step in the making of the nation state. We call it secularization, but in reality is that the nation state gets its own religion, a secular religion. This is part to the fact of the exaltation of the nation state in the Jacobin dictatorship. And, of course, the abolition of the relations between church and state in the first part of the revolution, the part that you will read about very carefully. Here I think I will stop and let you ask questions, because I say I'm just making remarks on this because your reading is so full. I don't have to cover anything, I think.